Hey, everybody, and welcome back for another episode of The Overlay, a poker podcast brought to you by CCG Poker, Chicago Charitable Games, the number one live charity poker experience. Hey, Brando, what up?
What up?
You know, we got a compliment at Batavia. A kid came up to me and he was like, I shouldn't say a kid. A guy came up to me. He looked younger. So I am at the age now where I can say kid, which.
Right. Well, you got 28 year olds are now kids.
Yeah. Yes. It's weird for me to think that way, but I guess that's what it is. And so this guy came up and he was like, hey, do you do the poker cat or podcast? And I was like, yeah. He was like, I really like your guys' podcast. He goes, you guys have, it's really good. He's like, the other guy's got a really good strategy. He's got really good strategy points. And then he's like, as long as you can get past all the rambling, it's a pretty good podcast. I was like, oh, cool. That's kind of us in a nutshell. As long as you can get past the rambling. Right. Get past the rambling. It's got some good information in there.
Which we're not the best at. Even though we've worked on it, we're still not the
best. Yeah, I can't help going off on tangents. It's just me. It's just how I am. I can't help it. But maybe that's what makes us so great. People enjoy the banter. Poker banter.
All right, what are we talking about today? Because
tournaments,
we're on a little bit of a time crunch.
Yeah, which is kind of what happens in a tournament. You're on a time crunch. So it's tournaments. What to look for? What are the most important aspects of a tournament? What to not look out for? Meaning what should cause some red flags for you? So we're going to kind of hit four points today, which is wild. We've never had like a hypothesis at the start of our podcast, but here we go.
Like an introduction? Oh my goodness.
Number one we're going to talk about is structure, which is arguably the most important. I think the other ones can be argued about what's the most important after structure, but structure is going to be number one. Payouts, number two. Rake, number three. And then the field size slash guarantee will be the last thing that we kind of hit on today. And you and I just talked pre-podcast here, and we said structure's got to be the most important thing when you're looking at a tournament and if you want to play or not. Now, we're not talking about like a local tournament and you got nothing else to do. So you're like, eh, shit, I'm going to go play poker and, you know, whatever the structure is, it is. But if you're actually like looking for like your field of events, the stuff that you're going to try to play this year and be like, I'm going to look for and look forward to and maybe like study for this tournament, structure's got to be the number one thing you look at, right?
Right. Or if you're like weighing the options of four different tournaments that are running on over a 2-weekend period, it's like, all right, well, I got this much money. I can't play them all. You know, all other things considered, you know, everything else being the same, which two am I going to pick?
Right.
Kind of start with the structure, right? I mean,
structure's got to be number one. And inside the structure, we mean starting stack size, the actual
blind levels,
the blind levels, the time of the blind levels. And I guess that's really all that structure has to do, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's the main points of a structure, right? So, how long the blinds are, when the blinds go up, you know, what blind levels do you start at, your starting stack, everything else is kind of a subcategory of structure, which we will get into, but those are the main three things you look at. You know, if you were White Sox Brian, you would look at how often are there breaks? Are the breaks 10 minutes or 15 minutes?
That's hilarious.
How far is the walk to the car? You know, stuff like that. We're going to leave that up to your own interpretation.
Right. Yeah, because you and I don't have to worry about the walking to the car thing. No. I also don't smoke anymore. So, like, clearly there's no poker rooms anymore that you can smoke inside. But, yeah, I guess that would go along with structure, you know, depending on break-wise. And some things are more important to others. I love starting the idea of like, oh man, I get a 50,000 starting stack, 60,000 starting stack, and the blinds start 100-100. And I'm like, that's awesome. But unless I'm playing at a $10,000 tournament where I want to get as much action as possible early on, where I'm a little bit more comfortable with knowing how to play, I honestly don't think I would want to play in, I'm trying to decide what the number would be, like a $100 tournament. I don't know if I want 100x big blinds to start. It's almost like that to me, that motivates me to start later where the stack sizes are less big blinds. Does that make sense?
Agreed. There has to be some balance of chip stack and starting level and blind time to where it balances out to be, you know, kind of, well, balanced. You don't really want 100k at 2550. You all and a half hour levels, that just seems like a waste of time.
Well, I mean,
you also don't want 100K, where the blinds start 1K, 1K, and double every 12 minutes.
Correct.
You also don't want that.
Nope. Yeah, there's got to be like an equation of like stack size plus blind levels plus structure plus buy-in equals whatever you want. I'm sure there's some kind of like Pythagorean theorem that works for poker, like Pokerium theorem that you can go up with.
Some algorithm that you just plug it all in.
Yeah, and just
well,
be like,
that kind of leads us into your structure. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I was watching. I was looking on Twitter, and most of my Twitter feed revolves around poker, especially if you follow at CCG Poker, which I predominantly do most of it, except when Brando does his takeover when he's in Vegas doing the WSOP. I get a lot of poker stuff, right? Like, it's obviously that's what we're related to, so that's what we see. And I noticed on there, Matt Savage, who is the founder of the Tournament Directors Association, arguably, and it wouldn't be much of an argument, the most famous poker tournament director on the planet.
Yeah, like I like
people know him, and they respect his opinion. And
remember, we had a rules question in CCG 2013, and Jim Hurley's just like, just tweet Matt Savage. He'll tweet you back.
And he does.
Tweet him, and he does.
And
it's funny.
And he even said, I saw this when I was going through his feed, and he was like, I will answer any question about if a rule is correct or not. He's like, what I don't want you to do is just at me, meaning like at Savage Poker, but don't put like Wynn Casino and Billy Poker Player, don't tag anything or anybody else. He's like, just ask the question, and then if you want to talk about it later, he's like, I don't want to be involved with like down like making fun of somebody else and being like, yep, that guy totally got it wrong. He's like, I won't respond to those, but I will respond to if you just at him and ask a question like, oh, this happened, what should the ruling be, and then he'll give the proper ruling. And as far as poker rules go, this guy's like the fucking Kemosabe.
Top notch.
Yeah, he's like Yoda of poker or better. Right? With better,
yeah, it's a good,
better
it's
speech
good, the
patterns.
Yoda of poker.
He's the Yoda of poker. He knows everything as far as tournament directing and rules go and if it's correct or not, as far as the TDA goes. Now, some people have local rules and things of that nature, but I think predominantly most tournament directors, or I should say most tournaments, follow, you know, the Tournament Directors Association, as their rules are they're the best, and they're very easy to read, and they have a free app. So I'm going to give a free plug to this as well. If it's something that you're interested in looking up, like the TDA app is great. So anyways, his structure that he came up with, which is very interesting and kind of different, is that the blind levels, there are no blind levels. There's no minutes that it goes up a certain amount of time. The blinds go off of the average chip stack, and it equates to giving you 50 big blinds at all times in the tournament, no matter where you're at.
Interesting. So basically, if you do, you know, they have the Bravo, which says average stack is 52,000 and the blinds are 501K, we're good.
Correct.
But then when it,
and they
and
stay that way.
Sudden,
they stay that way. And then until enough people get knocked out of the tournament that the average chip stack goes up, and it rounds out to like, you know, that would be 6-12, 1-2, whatever the case may be. So as more players get knocked out, you always have a 50 big blind stack. Which,
so once you can up the blinds and the average stack still stays at 50, that's when you up the
blinds? That's when the blinds go up. So if that lasts 4 minutes or if it lasts 4 days, I guess that's what it is. It stays the same the whole time. So as a player, it's a really interesting tournament, and they call it the Savage Average Tournament because his name's
great,
Savage.
And great name.
It also rhymes with average, which is pretty freaking amazing. And then this is something I think people have talked about in the past, and it is something that's very cool. And I don't want to go too far down the rabbit hole, but like my initial thought was, that's awesome. Like, what a super cool tournament. And then people are like, what do you do in the beginning when registration's open? And he's like, hey, registration, whatever 50 big blinds is off the starting stack, it's going to stay at that no matter how many players are in or out until that registration period closes, if it's 2 hours, 3 hours, whatever the case may be, at which point then it goes to the equation of whatever the average chip stack is, 50 big blinds is where we're going to do the big blind.
So there's a few little, you know, potholes in the structure, but
yeah, it's
for
interesting.
The most part,
it's interesting.
It's pretty, it is, and it's nice to just know,
right?
Like, you don't have to adjust when, you know, the bubble takes 4 hours and everyone's shallow and then all of a sudden everybody busts and the structure, you know, you kind of weave in and out of whether you let the structure catch up, especially at the tournaments at CCG. There's a point in time where the structure catches up to the stack sizes, right?
Correct.
And it's you're like forced that to middle play. Part after the registration closes in our Saturdays. And then they go up a little bit, and all of a sudden it's like pew, 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 and we break three tables.
Yeah.
Well, then it catches up, and all of a sudden.
Then the average stack sizes get higher, in which case it kind of flattens out for a little while, and then you kind of hit like a dead zone where you're not losing tons of players. And then again, what happens is the structure catches up again, and then
all of a sudden, average stack is 12 big.
Right. And then you get towards the bubble, and it locks down a little bit because the shorties are trying to get through the bubble. And then that kind of causes some play, and then you're at the final table, and then it's just like
then the bubble bursts and four people bust, and then all of a sudden the average stack just doubles.
Right? Because didn't you say
to 28
when you played the main event 2 years ago, and you got through the bubble, it went from like 1,100 people down to like 600 people. Like once the bubble burst, it was just like a floodgate.
Really, it was 1,000 people even cashed. And then we ended the day, $15,000 minimum cash was 15K. We ended the day three. I was in the money, came back like the first level, which is a 2 hour level. So it's not like it was instant, but the first level, we lost like 400 people.
Wow. 40% of the field. 40%
of the field just gone.
Say it that way. It's 40% of the field.
40% of the remaining field just instantly lights on fire. And then, you know, you start, you know, me being my first main event, you start looking and all of a sudden the pay jumps are just here.
Yeah.
It's 15,000, it's 17,000, it's 21,000, it's 25. You know what I mean? Like, and you know, that really shouldn't play a part in your thinking, but
it does.
It's kind of wild.
It's hard not to.
Especially when it's that much money.
Yeah.
And you know, ladders are all of a sudden $10,000, $12,000, $15,000 ladders when you're used to winning tournaments for $2,500.
Right.
$12,000 ladders are freaking awesome.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that, and then, you know, the
but it's all relative. It's relative to the buy-in, right? For them, it's like one buy-in. So that would be the difference in an early bird going from like 20 to 60.
20 to 40.
Well, you just like 3X'd your buy-in. Well, in the main event, that goes from 10K to 30K. And for me, $20,000 jump is a huge jump. Whereas 20 to 60, I'm like, nah, I still don't care, you know? Yep. I'm not even
and
looking
then
at that.
It's crazy because there's people in the main event that. It
they
is
also don't
to
care.
60 to them.
Right.
There it means nothing.
It's difficult. Which kind of brings us to, you know, structure is one thing. I think that tournament, that Savage Average, it's a very cool idea. I think
it's like a utopian society, right?
It is. It sounds like a great idea, but functionally, I don't know if it really works. And it's like, what if you get stuck with like 27 nits that are left and like nobody's doing anything and everybody's got 50 big blinds or more? It's like,
and there's just no blind pressure. It's almost like a cash game.
Yeah, it makes it very difficult to kind of finish a tournament. So I feel like it drags on a little bit more, which I'm not a huge fan of. I like the idea of there's a time constraint. I can kind of guesstimate how long these things are going to be. And if you play a deep stack at CCG, you know it's going to run from 4 o'clock until like midnight. You know, and if it's super nitty and gritty at the end and there's no chops happening, which again, we have the benefit of having, whereas like a WSOP or a WPT, MSPT, those things don't really happen as easily. You know, you can kind of gauge what's going on. I always like to know kind of how much time am I putting into this? And that's another factor for me, the time factor. I mean, I would love to play the main event. And don't get me wrong, if I got to day six, like I would be on cloud
11. Yeah.
200 and something thousand, because like it's not even cloud a lot, like it's like way past that, because again the money is so much bigger. But and again, that goes into that tournament poker algorithm of going, all right, well, the payouts versus the time, like that is significantly worth it. If you told me we're going to play a $300 tournament that lasts 5 days,
yeah, I'm out.
I don't care what it is. I don't care if you got 4 million people in there. Like that's a lot. Like that's too much, which I guess brings us to payouts. Payouts is definitely after structure, payouts are going to be number one. And I'm going to pull a page from Mr. Savage here. I am not going to say where the tournament was, but I saw some tournament payouts in a casino that were very off. It seemed super top heavy. Like first place was like 4,800. Second place, like 2,300. And then like 11. And then like 8, and then like all the way down to like $200 for like ninth place. And I was just like, whoa, like that's a big gap between, you know, seventh place at 200 and first place at almost 5K. Maybe again that the casino's thinking they want to force a chop towards the end where they really don't want them playing three-handed, but like go from first place of like 4,800 to third place in a tournament that's like $1,100, and this is like a $300 buy-in. That seems bad to me. I mean, I would argue, go ahead.
I just think knowing the payout structure going into it is really huge. Like knowing that that tournament is going to pay out 10% and then half of that money is going to go to first, you're going to play differently.
Correct.
Then, you know, knowing that any WSOP is going to pay out 15% and it's going to be very, very, very not steep. What's the word I'm looking for? Very flat. Very flat.
Or flatter. Where,
flatter, because I think that the WSOP and these bigger tours realize that there's not that much difference between getting third in a tournament and getting sixth in a tournament.
No.
Like, you know, beating a field of 4,200 and getting sixth versus getting third, why does third get triple the money as sixth? Like, they almost, like, you know what I mean? It's same thing as second, first being double second. Like, I get it. You get the glory of winning a tournament. But, like, you got one spot below them.
Right.
Like, they shouldn't get double the money.
It's one
like,
bad, you don't want it's one bad beat. Yeah. Right. It's just one for bad sure. beat. Aces versus jacks, and the guy rips a jack. It's like, well, I'm out. And, like, I have.
And you beating 99.99999% of the
field. Yeah, it seems.
Should be worth more than half of the guy that beats 100% of the field.
Correct. And then again, you know, to even say like some place like the main event last year, they did a very similar payout where first place was 12 million and second was six and change. It's like, again, who in their right mind? I don't care who you are. You could be a sheik in freaking Abu Dhabi, if that's a thing. And like $6 million between first and second. And we're heads up like. And there's $18 million in the prize pool. Let's just drop that up. It's $9 million apiece. Like I mean, good.
I think it could be like Phil Hellmuth against somebody who's never played poker before, and he would want to chop it.
I mean, maybe not Phil.
Literally,
but Phil.
Well, he's kind of a wussy and would want to. But I'm saying anybody.
But I'm sure they
would chop it up.
I assume they would still make some kind of deal. Like let's do 8.5 apiece.
And play for a million.
Like, I feel like that should be a more standardized thing for poker, and casinos should do it. I know they argue that it's like, well, we don't want to get involved with tax evasion or something along those lines. Perfect. Don't get involved with tax evasion by forcing them to say, hey, we're changing the payouts at three-handed, and we're going to do bop, bop, bop. They want you to play it on anyway, so the time constraints is not something that they want. And again, those types of events are going to be on television, so like maybe they don't want it to be. But there's no reason, like, you know what I mean? Like, let them do it and then just pay out accordingly. Like, give them a $10.99.
Sure they made a deal this year.
They did, but
behind
again,
closed doors. But it's behind closed doors, and
who
they
facilitates
had to get
that?
Lawyers and other things, because they took a break three-handed and came back the next day, and nobody gave a shit. So clearly, like. They figured it out amongst themselves, but like they shouldn't
and
have
had
to.
Actual contracts and like
for sure, yeah, lawyers and yeah.
I just feel like the casino could do like part of that, and like even if they charge like a minimal percentage, be like, all right, we'll do that for 2% of the prize pool or 2% of what's left or something along those lines. Just be like, all right, we're going to do X, and like then we'll handle it for you, which I feel like is good. Payouts are a difficult thing, and you never exactly know what payouts are. Sometimes they'll give you a range, and it'll say, you know, if there's this many players, this is how many spots get paid out, and if there's this many, you know, spots, this is the percentages that are going to get paid out. And you can just do the math yourself, which is great. Like, that's something to look for. Again, if you're going in, taking into account all of these things, I feel like I'm the recreational player that's like, meh, I'm sure it'll be fine. And if it's a little funky, whatever. Like, I'll make it work. Like,
so,
you know.
So I mean, you aren't really the best example.
I'm not.
Of someone to, like, you know, analyze all that stuff.
Correct.
You're just like, I'm here to play, I'm playing. But now one thing that you do take into account that moving on would be whether or not, you know, they hit the money on day one or not. I think that is a big thing, especially for somebody who's going to either be traveling an hour to Elgin, traveling an hour 20 to the Horseshoe.
The time constraints.
You're on team I want to be in the money or out on day one. I don't give a shit if I'm playing until 5 a.m. I don't want to come back to a day two and not be in the money.
My brother always had that argument. He's like, would you rather play for 8 hours and have nothing to show for it except that you got close to the bubble? Or would you rather play 2 hours, try to accumulate a big stack, and then switch gears? Obviously, if you accumulate a big stack, you can kind of change the way you're playing. You're not going to play like a wild man, but, you know, there is some kind of, you know, playing 8 hours and getting nothing for it versus playing 3 hours and getting nothing for it. I guess you got 5 extra hours of play, which if your goal going into it is just to play and enjoy the playing of it, and you're not really worried about, you know, cashing. Everybody wants to cash, but like, it depends on where that's at on your ranking of tournaments. And again, like you and I talked about, stack size is going to be one thing. Blind levels are going to be one thing. The time constraint, like if it's a 2-day tournament, am I in the money on day two? Do I have to come back for day two and I'm not in the money? I do always enjoy playing that PLO tournament, but I feel like the one at Elgin, part of the reason I didn't go was one, it was $400 buy-in, which I thought was a little low. They have now switched it to the $600 price range, which I think is better. And then I want to say like day one didn't actually get you into the money. And I was like,
yeah, like you go home with 23 left and the top 16 make it.
I've done it before. And I only had to walk across the street in a Venetian tournament. They played down to 10%. And yeah, we actually kind of went over on time, and they're like, all right, well, we're just going to play to like 14% and then just bring them all in. They're like, oh, well, the day one A didn't get in the money either. So like, we're not worried about day one B getting in the money because like, you're already going to be on a bubble when you come back.
And for sure,
sleeping on the bubble. And I remember tweeting out from Vegas from my hotel room and like, oh, made day two of the Venetian, you know, like, you know, a 1K, you know, PLO championship.
Yeah. $1,100 PLO. Yeah.
1K plus the rake. And they were like, oh, congratulations, that's awesome. Then I was like, I didn't have the heart to tell everybody, well, like, I'm not actually in the money. Like,
I haven't won anything yet, guys.
I appreciate
it.
But like,
I just ran out of time on the first day.
Right. I just made it through the structure. I haven't gotten busted yet. And what happened? I went there the next day.
And
I stone cold bubbled. I was like, I think 54 got back and like 48.
Eight got back. I was there.
Yeah, it was like six players, and I was the sixth player to bust. And then it was, and I didn't even,
you got like 50th.
Part of my, yeah, part of my deal was that I also was not paying attention to like the exact bubble and how many players were left. I was trying not to let that affect my play. And I got, you know, big ace king, or ace queen with suited, you know, double suits and, you know, like an 8-9. I
you're
was like,
there and you're losing.
I'm down to like freaking 7 big blinds. Like, I got to make something happen here. And I also think I was like under the gun. So like, I'm going to be the blinds next hand. So, and they do an anti tournament there. So I was like, well, this looks good to me. I would rather play ace queen 8-9 double suited.
Yeah.
With the ace and the queen being the high end of the suit. Which again is a factor, right? I mean, if it was like 8-9 of clubs versus ace queen of diamonds, that's not as good as ace 8 of clubs and queen 9 of diamonds.
Right. You got two higher flush
draws. I got two higher flush draws. And, you know, as it turns out, the guy had kings and I didn't flop any diamonds or any clubs. I was just like, no.
Or any pairs or any pairs.
No, no, worst case, I flopped a queen, which was awesome because like, and my ace was no good because he had ace king king something, so I was like, I can't even flop an ace here and be good. Like, I need to flop Broadway. Yeah,
and
or
then you turn the flush draw too.
I did turn like diamonds, and then obviously I think I hit the diamond on the river, but it paired the board, so I was just brick city there. But that's even worse when you get like the emotional high of like, oh yeah, oh no,
oh, you slammed your card. Oh, I'm still not good.
Oh shit, I still can't beat it.
You know, that's one of those things where, and again, if it was a 10K buy-in and the min cash was 15,000,
I would have gone slower.
Maybe you'd be mucking.
This was like
yourself.
A $1,700 payout for min cash. And again, don't get me wrong, $1,700 sounds great, especially after you've punted all your money in Vegas already. Like,
but it ain't life changing.
It's not life changing at that point. If I bubble, I bubble, and I'm not going to change my play to just try to hold out for, you know, for a $600 winner for a day and a half of play. And it's like, I don't know. It doesn't seem great. So that's payouts.
Check the payouts. Make sure you're in the money on day one if you want to be. I mean, when I'm in Vegas, I value my time there so much. I kind of want to play a little turbo-y. I love the one days. Let me just win 30,000 one day or be out in 4 hours and go on my way.
Venetian has them all the time. The deep stacks there are like $180, $200 buy-ins, and they're one-day rips. And like first place is like 30K, 20, 24, yeah, 25. That, I am, I would much rather play that.
And you're going to have to realize that the structure, you know, you're back
not
to
as good.
You know, point A, you're not as good. The blinds are going to be going up. They're going to be skipping. They're going to go straight from 4.8 to 6.12. You ain't going to get 500 to 1,000.
But again,
you know, you're going to get 20-minute levels.
Right. Use your
and it's going to be quick.
Use your algorithm. Use your equation of going, all right, what do I value the most? You and I are going to value time. I would rather play two $500 tournaments that are one-day deep stacks versus a two-day PLO.
Day WSOP 1K buy-in.
Yeah.
Where even if you make day three and you make it deep, yeah, you cash for 6K. It's like, sweet, I made 5K. Yeah, I also spent 48 hours of my time in Vegas sitting in a 1K.
Yeah. Where I made $600.
I could have busted 12 tournaments and lost 4K in blackjack.
Right.
What am I doing playing this 1K?
Right. Well, I'll even jump to point number four, field size and the guarantees. A lot of times.
And rake. We can add rake. All of this is.
Yeah, it is all. It's all relative together. I mean, rake is rake, right? And the only thing we want to talk about rake is most of these tournaments are going to have a good rake structure. And they'll tell you right up front what it is. You do have to make sure you read that fine print because there is going to be probably a 3% management fee that'll come off the top as well as the rake. So if it's a $330 tournament, you know, $300 goes in the prize pool, $30 is the rake. Then you also notice in the fine print at the very bottom, it says all 3% will be kept out of the tournament prize pool for you know, floor and dealers, which is fine. You bear that in mind when you're, because it is part of it, you know. But again, for the most part, if you're playing at a casino, or you know, like a tour, you really don't have to worry about the rake. You know what it's going to be.
It's pretty standardized.
It's not going to be outrageously one way or the other.
I do think the big point about rake, and this is the Daniel Negreanu you sign in Vegas, it is like if you're going to play a tournament that literally is a 300 plus 10, you're going to have every single grinder, every single pro, every single value hunter, every single person that you probably don't want to be playing against is going to be in that tournament. Because they see the value in the 300 plus 10, and they're crunching their numbers,
right?
And they need to beat their rake
because to them,
for their bottom line,
the value, right? Their value, they're placing a higher value on the amount of money that they're paying versus what goes in the prize pool. When that is very low percentage,
you're gonna get a high caliber of player.
You get a much better, a higher caliber player. Players that are used to playing a lot, they're willing to grind for 4 days and make, you know, three times their buy-in, and they're happy as shit about it because to them that's the high value. Clearly, we're not those
plus
players.
It's probably their job, and it's probably like, oh, what else am I gonna do? This is my job. I mean, if I can find a spot to triple up, it doesn't matter how long it takes. This is a good spot for me. Whereas if you go down to a random, you know, Elks Lodge,
right?
100 plus 100, $200 buy-in, but 100 of it's going to the Elks Lodge, and you're going to have 80-year-old dealers on a square plastic white
tablecloth, right? With bicycle cards
and bicycle
poker chips.
So yeah, you're probably not going to have the best experience in terms of
all the stuff we just talked about, structure, payouts, and rake. However, where does the benefit come in?
That none of those people have probably ever played poker before.
They're going to be shitty players.
They probably played poker in the 50s.
Which has some negatives. Like, I always tell people, like, you know, playing...
It isn't all bells and whistles playing forehands against people.
Yeah, there's landmines that you got to avoid, and you're going to be, you might get it in 80-20, and you're the 80, but one out of five times, you still lose. So, like...
Here's the thing. You're probably leaving that place, if you're not in the money, upset because of how you
got screwed. Right. Like, does that guy play that? You know why that guy plays that? Because he doesn't know any better. And that's a good thing. Because, again, take it for what it is. Again, if your value is, I want to play against bad players because I have such an advantage on them, well, great. Problem is,
pay high rake and be,
you got to pay. You got to. The negatives come along with that. So I think it's good. Let's go into field size, because really with rake, they're so standardized that you really don't have to worry about it too terribly much, unless you're going to have to worry about it where it's like that 50% is going to charity, which is fine. You're playing in an event that's geared towards a charitable aspect
and you know
versus
it,
the poker aspect. Yeah. But I've seen many events that are like, you know, $200 buy-in and first place is a main event package. And it's a one-day deal, and you know the structure is going to be shit. You know the rake is going to be shit. But the players are very bad, which again, that might outweigh some of these things. That equation might change a little bit where you go, I got to play 200 people and I'm going to, and I am better than 99% of them play wise. If I just play solid poker, like I should do okay. And I can avoid some monster beats. Like you're going to have to lose an 80-20, 70-30 would be the absolute best case that the other player's going to have. Meaning I'm a 70% favorite getting in. Again, if you take that for what it is, that's not too terribly bad.
Agreed.
Field size.
You're getting an ace king versus their ace four off, and you're like,
and they bang a four, like whatever, man, you lose. Like that's fine. Like I'm happy with that. And again, I played this tournament to try to steal a main event seat, and it is what it is. Like, and again, I went to some, you know, a charitable organization. That's good. Great. I mean, that's a win-win no matter what.
Plus, another good thing is that tournament ain't lasted more than 5 hours.
No, that's the other thing. So the structure is going to struggle. Yeah. Yeah. Again, the only benefit there is that you're paying a $200 tournament and hoping to bink a $12,000 main event package. That yep. seems okay to me. Yep. Or again, if you're taking that as the value that you want, that's what you're going to get. All right, field size and guarantee. And we're going to briefly talk about this because it kind of makes sense to one another. Bigger the field size, the better the payouts, right?
Yep.
Higher the guarantee, again, will guarantee that you're going to get a certain amount of players, and that's good as well. But again, it kind of goes back to that low rake. It's the same equivalency where you're going to draw in some better players. Better players are going to want to play, and you see them in Texas all the time. You know, $300 buy-in tournaments with 50K guarantees, and I'm like, damn, I know they're not going to get, you know, there's going to be a small overlay at some point 80% of the time, because you can't have four tournaments in the city of Houston all doing 30, 40, 50, 60, 80, 100K tournaments that are all low lines. There's just not enough players. Like it's just, and they're all one days. Like you're going to benefit from that, which is great. So at that point,
but the second day post, there's a $28,000 overlay. Now everybody is like, oh, there's no rake. Well, the rake's going to be diminished. There's value. All of a sudden come racing in the 19 guys with backpacks, headphones, and hoodies,
with their GTO cards and ready to go, who have been studying for the last 3 years on how to play poker, ripping online left and right to try to play tournaments and get the idea of what they want. So then you're going to have to fight a tougher field.
Yeah.
But the benefit is that
the
prize pool is guaranteed.
The payout's going to be great. The prize pool is guaranteed. The payouts are going to be good. The rake's going to be low. It's all like checks and balances. You can't have the best of both worlds.
There's nothing.
A bunch of shitty players with no rake and great payouts and a high guarantee. Like,
right.
Those things don't exist.
They don't.
Just pick your poison.
You got to figure out what you value.
You pay more in rake and get kind of a weaker field. Do you want low payouts? You know, like for instance, you play the CCG $330 buy-in Gold Strike, one table. You know, you might have four or five bad people.
Right.
The rake's going to be okay, but then again, it's top two. You got to win, basically.
Yeah.
You know, you get third place. Sorry. Nice. Thanks for coming out.
You Try might be able month. To discuss a chop for third, or, you know, pay their money. But even then, that's kind of hard to do, and it doesn't always happen. I mean, if you got a guy or a girl who's got, you know, 60% of the chips in play, and you're down to three players, and you've got four big blinds, what do you think that answer is going to be? Probably no.
Probably no.
So, you know, it is what it is. But then again, you got third in a sit and go. Like, what did you expect?
What'd you beat? You beat five people. You beat six people.
Right. I think field size is great. You know, when you play like, you know, a WSOP, WPT, you know, these big circuit events, you know, yeah, it's great. You know, the buy-ins are going to be reasonable. They always do that opener one where it's like $300 to $400 in the circuit events, and that's awesome. And they get a ton of players, and the prize pool is massive. But you got to get through a field of just a ton of players. And at that point, you're not getting the high rake bad players. You're getting, you know, the mediocre players are still pretty good. You know what I mean?
So, yeah.
And you got to fight the really good players.
For sure. They're all in that field as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think, like, to sum it all up, like, the best, kind of, you know, tournament that takes everything into account and, you know, is kind of the median for everybody is like the monster stacks everywhere. Cause you have a decent, rake. It's industry standard rake. You have a nice starting stack. You got a nice field of 600-700 players, but makes the money in day one.
Right.
And then you can play for a shithouse full of money on day two. Obviously the field's going to be tough. However, every kind of recreational guy is going to pony up the $300 or $400 for that tournament. Mm-hmm. Cause that's kind of the good value. One of the circuit. So you kind of get the best of both worlds. Yes. You know, everything's kind of in the middle of the road. Structure, solid. Rake, solid. Payouts, solid. Your time, you know, your time invested, solid.
Solid.
You know, the caliber of player, you're going to have some really bad players, some really good players, kind of evens out. Solid. Everything's kind of middle of the road there. And I think that's why those tournaments do so well, is because you don't really, you know, when everybody kind of plugs that in,
it attracts
to their
everybody.
Own personal algorithm,
makes it,
it
makes
says play that tournament.
Yep.
And that's what you guys got to do and we got to do. You got to like plug in what you really want to get out of the tournament. Do you want to play a long time? Do you want to win a lot of money? Do you want to play against bad people? Do you want to, you know, hunt for value and pay no rake? It's really up to you. And then I think you kind of got to select your tournament, you know, schedule based on what your specific algorithm spits out for you.
For us, I think we value the most on time.
Yep. Other players especially might, when I'm in Vegas. In Vegas. I want one days.
Yeah, I want one days. I don't want to play a 3-day tournament. And even though I know like first place is $1 million, like that sounds awesome. You know, like we played that 10K and we both ponied up for it in that PLO championship, which was awesome.
$1.8 million
But like we were outclassed and we had to play against some really freaking name brand players, you know, which again was kind of cool in itself. I was mildly excited about that. I thought that was kind of awesome. But again, we're the bad players in that field and it's over 3 days. The play is going
to,
the cream's going to rise to the top, right? When you play a 1 day, you can kind of get away with being the middle of the road player, you know, like a decent player and still finish the tournament, right? Like if we're running a Ironman, you and I are not going to finish. If we're doing a 4 mile sprint or 4 mile, you know what I mean? Like a 5K or something, I might be able to finish it and I could probably place okay. I mean, that doesn't exactly evaluate, but you know what I mean? Like there's a chance I can get it done over 3 days. Like, I'm going to have a hard time beating some of these players. And you got to take that into account with the field size and the guarantee and the buy-in and the amount of time you're playing. Like those guys' skills are going to catch up to you and either study harder or just take the good with the bad.
And I also, last thing before we go, in terms of time, I flew into Vegas late for that PLO, straight from Mexico to LAX into Vegas. I rolled into Vegas and was in the 10K. I had a complete vacation, flew home, and was watching the final table in my bed 4 days later. You know what I mean? Like that's when you start to realize how like the time really comes into play. It's like I had a full vacation, flew home. I'm back in Indiana.
Right.
I've now gone to Rivers, played there after you know my flight, gone home and in bed, and now I'm watching the final five. It makes you really think like, oh, wow, you know, to make $1.5 million, it seems like such a pipe dream. It's so hard and so long and so time-consuming. It's almost like, you know, viewing it now, it's almost like we just didn't even have a chance.
We could have taken the same 10,000, played 20 $500 one days, and I guarantee we would have profited on the 21 days than you and I playing on one.
At least had like a run or two where we had a shot at winning. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yep. Nope. That's all I got.
Algorithm. Figure out your own. Brandon and I know ours, at least to some extent. We don't follow it, but yet we do at least have an idea of what it is. As always, thank you for listening to the podcast. We appreciate each and every one of you that comes over and says that you listen to it and say hello. It's awesome. Don't be afraid. We'd love to hear it. Even if you've got bad feedback, be like, you guys sound stupid. I won't mind. We're probably not going to change it anyways.
At least press is good press.
At least I know you listen to it once. Cool. That's a download. I'll take it. I don't care what it is. You might actually hit follow. So I'm going to get like 10 downloads and you didn't even listen to them. Boom. Who's the loser now on a podcast? Actually, that's not true. It's neither me or Brandon. Follow us on Twitter at The Overlay Pod. Other than that, maybe we'll see you at a WSOP, a circuit or otherwise event soon. Thank you, as always, for listening. Brando, lead us out of here.
Farewell, everybody. Safe travels in this winter weather.
See ya. Bye.